I did something wrong. Did you? I was born a big baby. If I were smaller, then it would have been easier for my mother to have delivered me. I was also her fifth child. Perhaps if I had been her sixth child, I would have made it even easier on her. When I was being toilet trained, I did things wrong. When I was learning to feed myself, I did things wrong. When I tried standing up, I did things wrong. When I tried walking, I did things wrong. When I wanted to explore my environment, the things around my house, the objects that I could touch and reach, and I wanted to touch those things even if they were off limits, which I found out later on, I did things wrong. When I disobeyed other people's rules, I did something wrong. When I didn't know and didn't meet other people's expectations, I did something wrong. Guess what? Today is about I did something wrong. About 6 days ago, I got an email from a company that I have a service with. We use this online service to keep track of all of our customer service requests and questions and complaints and praises and so on. And the email that I got to them from them said that they had canceled our service and removed all of our information from their servers. I flipped out. That was so upsetting to me because literally it involved thousands and thousands of interactions by my customer service department. After receiving that email, that spent the whole night tossing and turning in agitation. I'd turn over and think about it and get all kinds of aggravated and back and forth, back and forth. At some point, I realized I needed help, so I turned to God and asked for help not only in relieving this stress and this frustration and anxiety about this problem, but also to see if there was a deeper meaning into it. And I wanted to be able to go into it and extract that deeper meaning if it were there. And frankly, I'm convinced that all of our experience have deeper meanings, that if we're willing to look for them, much like a pearl in an oyster, they are there every single time. Now, I knew it was going to be devastating to our customer service department to have lost all the pending questions that were waiting for answers or needed to be attended to, as well as the 5 or 6 years of questions and responses that we had in our archives. But it dawned on me that since I wasn't going to be the one that was impacted by the work, I mean, I wasn't going to have to recreate this personally, it didn't mean I was going to have to do more things. And it also didn't mean that customers or anybody else was going to be mad at me personally. But I did want to know if there had been a deeper issue. And I thought there had to have been, otherwise I wouldn't be so upset about this. So some of the thoughts that swirled through my mind through the course of that evening and even the next day for a while was this idea that I should have done something to prevent this, because I was in conversations with these people and I felt like they didn't understand and I hadn't communicated, so I thought I should have stayed on top of this. And underlying that was this idea that I did something wrong. This problem existed because I did something wrong. And all of that just added to my agitation. And it was that deepest I did something wrong that I wondered if that had been a root belief for me, and maybe on a global level for other people as well, then it would really behoove me to see if I could get down to the very base of it, if I could really dig deeply into that. And then it occurred to me that I was having this experience with this software company as a means to become more aware of a deep-seated belief that needed healing, which is in harmony with my goals, to be more attentional, more intentional, more aware, more conscious. And so removing barriers to that awareness is what I'm interested in doing, and I thought perhaps this was one of those experiences, which then this was a good thing that I was involved in. looked like quicksand, but in fact, it was going to be really cool. So I had a couple of different phrases going on besides the one that I just mentioned. This "I did something wrong" was the key one, but then it was "I didn't communicate effectively," and I didn't get them to understand. Otherwise, when I tried to upgrade our account, they wouldn't have interpreted that as a cancellation request. And so I knew as a result of that, in order to get the value out of these experiences, I needed to dig more deeply. I had needed to journal about it. I needed to pray about it. I needed to do the healing codes and EFT about it. A thought occurred to me the next day that I wondered if the impulse that's necessary for our individuation from divine consciousness, that is, for us as spiritual beings to take occupancy of a physical form, that individuation is if we needed rejection as a way for us to break away from the whole, the one, and to become self-conscious as human individuals. And if we use rejection as a part of that individuation or individualization, either word will work, if we use rejection to push ourselves away, to separate from, if we are in fact sowing the seeds of rejection, if we initiate it, we're going to have a harvest of it. And so the idea that this rejection, as we push ourselves away from divine consciousness to become an individual and to explore, do we find fault with that action of individuation? There's a book I've mentioned sometimes on the Sunday talks called Remarkable Healings, written by a psychiatrist in West Virginia. Her last name is Modi, M-O-D-I. She used hypnosis on her patients to help them overcome a huge variety of things. And it was a fairly common occurrence for her to make contact with people under hypnosis and to uncover resistance to being born physically. That is, they had some misgivings. The spiritual being was like, you know what? I've got second thoughts about occupying a body. I want to just stay in spiritual form, and I don't want to move into the physical form and all that involves in human life. So that sequence seemed to be pretty regular, and this should I not kind of thing could be part of doing something wrong. Now, it's pretty clear that individuation is necessary for us to have individual lives physically. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to distinguish us from other things. If I happen to be standing here speaking into a microphone and looking at chairs and out the window and so on, if we didn't have this ability to see and distinguish separate entities or identities, we would all be the same thing. And that's kind of confusing from a human life standpoint. If we couldn't tell the difference between us and the chair right next to us, or the floor we're standing on, or the lemon tree that I'm looking at out the window, that would be very complicated. So to play the game of human life on this planet, it is necessary for us to have this individualization in order to play with these various objects that we create or imagine or become aware of. This whole idea is explained in the Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth, in which Christ is talking about the truth of existence and talking about bonding and rejection. It's very interesting to see how we play out using these factors. Whether we're aware of them or not, we can become aware of them. Let's go back to that idea, I did something wrong. Just that idea could be completely wrong. The whole idea could be off. Maybe all doing, everything that we do, every action that we take, every inaction that we decide upon, is really for the purpose of connecting with our source of being, divine consciousness, God, however you want to refer to that. So everything that we do is geared toward that. And so it's just a journey. It's just a journey if we look at it. And that means there is no wrong way to get there as long as you keep going and going and making an effort in one form or another to return to that connection with the source of our being. It's clear that any of our actions during the journey of life can be measured in many different ways. We can judge things based upon how much time is required. We do that all the time in a work setting, for instance, for planning purposes. We measure things in terms of distance to be covered. How far do we have to go yet? We look at things in terms of the monetary cost. What do we have to invest in it? And monetary profits. What are we going to get back from it? We look at it, lessons learned, emotion felt, joy, experience, awareness received, etc. A lot of different ways to measure. But if we judge our actions in a very limited way, such as, is it right or is it wrong? Is it good or is it bad? Then we are really narrowing our own awareness. We're not broadening it. We're not deepening it. We're not elevating it. We're narrowing it. We're deliberately or unintentionally reducing our ability to process information. We realize that our interactions with other people, other things, even ourselves, or just energy exchange experiences during our journey are all about exchanging energy, having that energy, and being able to make a new decision. But if we get into judging them and making them wrong and finding fault with them, we're simply making our journey more difficult and more painful. Instead of thinking of right or wrong or good or bad, if we know that advancing in life, and however we define that for ourselves individually, that it's more of a function of awareness, and we work on our awareness, then everything becomes easier and, in fact, much more fun. The truth of existence says we're individuals, and that's good. That's really how it's been designed in divine consciousness, that we should be individuals. And when we represent in ourselves as spiritual beings instead of purely physical beings, then it's much easier for us to navigate in life because of the truth of existence and how they support us. Even though it looks like we're separate, we're individuals, if you pay even the least bit of attention, you can recognize that we're intimately connected to God and the support of divine consciousness. We're not separate, we're not isolated, we're not abandoned, we're not alone. We're intimately connected. I'm standing on a floor. This wooden floor is on a concrete slab. This concrete slab is on Mother Earth. And Mother Earth is using forces that have been designed, like gravity, to keep from throwing me off into outer space, even though the Earth itself is rotating at a very, very fast speed. I had breakfast this morning with my family, and essentially everything that we were eating for breakfast, and it was an elaborate birthday kind of celebration breakfast, it was all from the earth, with very little processing involved in all this delicious stuff that we just had. It's like, we really have been provided for from nutrition and nourishment and our growth and so on. It really, really is fantastic. And we are so connected. As we become more aware that of our connection to the divine, it becomes clearer and clearer that the statement, I did something wrong, is false. The other night I had an unpleasant conversation with a man out in a bar restaurant. And it was after the exchange that I realized that there is a tendency, and I was experiencing it, to find fault with our responses to demands. I've mentioned this many times that Hans Selye, the father of modern stress study, defined stress as the nonspecific response to a demand placed upon a body. Nonspecific response to a demand. And so, you know, this, I should have had a different response. I should have done this differently. I should have said this. I should have not said that. I should have done this. I should have not done that. Those kind of fault-finding, second-guessing are really ways that we can add stress right back into our lives. When we respond to a demand, we're responding from our level of awareness at that moment in time, using the best information and choices and knowledge available to us. We choose the highest and the best every time, based upon our level of awareness. If we understood that and recognized that, then we could become more at peace with the way we're thinking of things, instead of what we tend to do is judge them after the fact, and so on. If we realized, and we certainly would under normal circumstances, if you recall when you had a child or you were a child, you didn't expect a child to be a PhD. You expected a child to live and act and think and speak from the awareness of a child, not from the awareness of a PhD. And when a person is a PhD, you expect them to speak from the awareness of a PhD and act that way as well, instead of acting as if they were a child. We act from whatever level of awareness we happen to be accessing at that moment in time. I think there must be pain for a perfectionist in the tendency to rejudge their action using different awarenesses than the one that was available when they took the action in the first place. Everybody in America is familiar with the phrase Monday morning quarterback. That's used to describe on Monday people making decisions on what the quarterback should have done on Sunday afternoon when they were playing a football game. Or he shouldn't have thrown that pass, which was intercepted, and they shouldn't have done this, and that the ball was fumbled, and so on. Anybody can do that the day after because they've got more information, they got a different level of awareness, and they can see the consequences of the action. It's easy to decide, oh, that consequence is not what I was expecting or hoping for, and so we should have done something differently in order to get the desired goal accomplished. Another phrase that everybody is familiar with is hindsight is 20/20, which is basically saying that looking back at something after it's already occurred, it's very clear whether it worked out well or it didn't work out well. And now you can make a decision, oh, well, we should have zigged instead of zagged instead of zagged instead of zigged. Easy enough to do after the fact. Knowing what to do as you're about to do it is a lot more challenging than looking back at something and say, oh, we shouldn't have done that. That was wrong. We did something wrong. I think the stress of this experience is of undoing a response, it's going to be more or less specific, that when we responded in this moment of time, in 10 or 15 minutes or a day or so, when we look back at it, if we undo what we did, we take that energy back, and now it starts to swirling in a, what I would describe as a bonding rejection tornado of, I should have, and I shouldn't have. And those two energies are now swirling, creating tremendous static for us. It's when we're doing that, we don't finish business. We don't complete something because we won't bring it to completion. We continually are redoing it after the fact with the next level of awareness. And tomorrow we could do it again, and the day after we could do it again, which says we're still stuck in the same energy pattern, and we're rehashing it. That's problematic. That tornado of I should have and I shouldn't have is really very destabilizing to people. So upsetting, in fact, that oftentimes people are unable to take action because their habit pattern is such that they know they're going to produce this sort of a tornado of stress, I should have and I shouldn't have, and they're not going to be able to settle on either one of those in order to complete the cycle and get into a position of feeling relief. Think back to the biblical account of Genesis during creation. It's described that God is said to have become aware of a need, and then he decides to let it be. I capitalize B. He decides to let it be, and then pronounces the newly created form, whether it's the earth or the water, light, he pronounces it good. I call that idea confirmation. Idea confirmation. God had an idea, took action regarding that idea, and confirmed it by seeing it as good. There's nothing in that creation sequence that indicates that God did something wrong. He or she or it saw a need, didn't resist it, didn't resist its existence, and consequently let it be, and then confirmed it. And we've been taught for more than 2,000 years that we as human beings did something wrong. And our doing something wrong is what has resulted in all human suffering right up to today. We already know this, that by focusing on something or doing something wrong, or even focusing on trying to avoid doing something wrong, is literally the fastest way to attract doing something wrong into our physical experiences. We literally will attract it tremendously quickly. Here are four ideas about how we manufacture the conclusions that we did something wrong. Number one, we judge our actions as not providing the better feeling that we were looking for. Instead of seeing as a process, maybe there is 12 steps in it. When we take one step, we go, oh, this, I did something wrong. This hasn't completed it. But if we look back at creation, God didn't do everything with the snap of a finger. It took 6 days, you know. Why not create it at a different time? Why not speed it up? Why not do it all in the same day? So when we judge our actions as not being successful or part of a process, we can get feelings that we did something wrong. The second idea is that when we look back from our present time at what has occurred, so we're looking back with greater awareness right now than we had when we took the action, and we negatively compare what we did to now, we can say, oh, I had other choices, I could have handled it differently. Those things weren't available to us originally, but they are now. And so if we compare and use that, we can very easily find fault what we did the day before when we compare it to the choices that we now know are available to us, even though we didn't see those choices. We weren't aware of those choices in the first place. The third point is when we compare ourselves to others and decide that we did something wrong, or else we would be, fill in the blank, enough. We would be good enough, or rich enough, or smart enough, or handsome enough, or lovely enough, or whatever, enough, just like they are. Since we aren't like them, we must have done something wrong. That's the only way we can explain why there's a difference. And the fact of the matter is, everybody and everything is different, which is exactly the way it's designed to be. That's what individuation is all about. It's all of these individual particles now can make their way back to the whole. But when we find fault with that, by incorrectly and erroneously comparing ourselves to others, it's easy to arrive at the conclusion that we did something wrong. The fourth point is that we make our actions about us. So here we are, we're thinking of a goal and we're thinking of accomplishing something, and then when we bump into some obstacle, what we decide is that we need to focus on, we did something wrong. So instead of keeping our attention and intention on what we want to accomplish and what we're seeking to gain or create, what we do is we now focus on ourselves. And when we shift that focus to ourselves, we can see that we're limited, we don't have the power, and so on. We've not stayed in focus with what we want, and to be able to access divine support in the accomplishment or the fulfillment of that need, we kind of put a circle around ourselves and seal ourselves off. And now all of a sudden, because we made it about ourselves and we think it's only about ourselves, we've isolated. And that's how we end up thinking we did something wrong. I think if we could learn from God, and hello, who can't possibly learn from God? Who could possibly be a better teacher than God? And if we can learn from God, we could learn the truth that we all think, we all feel, and we all act from our present level of awareness. If we want to be more effective in life, if we want to think more effectively, feel more effectively, take more effective actions, we will want to focus on increasing our awareness. I say awareness is the factor that determines our success, our health, and our happiness. It is what either boosts us up to allow us to fulfill our destinies, or if we have limited awareness, it puts us in a prison, a cage, a box. Have you ever thought about this? Don't you think that God did more than just create during those first 6 days? Right? God didn't just work for 6 days and then stopped working, right? And went into judgment and punishment from that point on. That doesn't make any sense. Is it likely that God set up a system of creation that would support the beings that he created? This is the idea that is explained thoroughly in the book, Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. If God provided for our growth, our nutrition and nourishment, our health, our protection, our work, our survival, all within a rhythmic system of predictable laws that bring order to the universe, we can then set our attention and intention on becoming aware of these aspects of God in our lives. At the same time that we're aligning with God in these ways, we can also receive awareness about the ego drives that can lead us to ineffectively bond or ineffectively reject. So if we ineffectively bond with what we believe we need or want, even though it's not accurate, or we inappropriately reject what we believe we don't need or don't want, even though it's not accurate, we run into a lot of struggle, a lot of pain, a lot of frustration, a lot of misemotion. And it's easy to judge after the fact, excessive bonding and excessive rejecting, and think or feel that we did something wrong. With practice, and as we become more aware, and we're able to distinguish between the impulses of our higher nature, our intention to become aware of God's presence in our lives, and on the other side, versus the ego drives toward self-gratification at the expense of others, with no regard to the needs of other people. When we can distinguish between those two, becoming aware of the presence of God versus instant self-gratification at the expense of other people, we can start choosing more effective actions that will lead more to the idea, confirmation, and the truth that I did something good, which is really the reality that all of us are looking for. I did something good. That's a nice story to add to our lives. I would like to end the service with a prayer. This prayer is the pluralized version from letter 8 in Christ Returns. Father, Mother, God. Whoops, that's how I normally say it. That's my normal prayer. This prayer goes, Father, Mother, Life, you are our life. Our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know that it is your will that we should be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence that has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. It is so. Thank you. Amen.